Well, extraordinary scenes in the United States. 6 nights now. 6 days of peaceful protests and 6 nights of what have been at times much less peaceful scenes. And the response of the United States president very much on people's minds as well. Our US correspondent today is Susan Davis, congressional correspondent for NPR, co-host of the NPR Politics podcast. Susan, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
How are things today as we go into what, the sixth, the seventh day since George Floyd's death?
We are anticipating a seventh evening of protests in cities all across the country. Here in Washington, the mayor has already announced a curfew to beginning at 7 p.m. in the evening, both tonight and extending into tomorrow. And as I'm sure you've seen the images, it has been devastation across the country. There has been not only the destruction of private businesses, but of public places, famous landmarks here in Washington. There was defacing of the Lincoln Monument and the World War II Memorial. There has been raucous protests outside of the White House and ongoing clashes with police and additional police killings. There was an additional shooting of a black man in the city of Louisville, Kentucky, by white officers that has already led to the resignation of the police chief there. We are in the midst of profound civil unrest, certainly unlike I've seen in my lifetime. I think the closest people could point to is 1968, where there were similar riots and unrest during the civil rights movement. And of course, this all happening amid an ongoing pandemic that just last week saw the U.S. pass the 100,000 death mark. So to say that I think the United States is in a point of crisis would probably be an understatement. And frankly, the president's leadership on this is lacking, and he is increasingly under fire, not only for his rhetoric and oftentimes racist rhetoric that he has employed, not just in this, but in the past, but in how he's handling it and how will the country stop this and move forward.
We'll come to him in a moment. I am interested in how the National Guard is being used currently and also the approach of the police themselves with protesters. The president has called for them to dominate the protesters, but so far, what is the strategy? I appreciate there are different forces in different states, but what is the strategy and what has been the role of the National Guard so far?
Well, important to understand that each state has its own National Guard that responds to the governor. So any governor can call up his own National Guard at will. You could also federalize a response and bring in federal troops mandated by the federal government. That has not yet happened, but the president has not ruled it out. Here in Washington, because we're sort of a unique place, we're not a state itself, oftentimes, and because we're the seat of government, federal officers will have to come in and support the local metropolitan police department. So there is a division between state power and federal power. Escalating to federal militarization of the states would be another pretty profound escalation. It's hard to quantify the response between police and protesters because this is happening in a very diverse country across thousands of miles in very different places. And there has been, of course, focus on additional cases of brutality or what appears on these video images to be overreach by the police. At the same time, there have been places and cases where you have seen police facilitating peaceful protests. Again, here in Washington, along the peaceful protest route today, there were police officers who were lined the route down on one knee, taking sort of a symbolic protest stance here that had been used during protests in our National Football League. And sort of a sign of solidarity with the protests. Important to remember that in this country, a lot of police officers, particularly in urban cities, are also African-American. So the history of race and racism, I think, is in this country is unlike any other. And it bubbles, it simmers and boils and cools down at different points in our history. And right now, I think we're at a full boil. And the question, I think, for policy leaders and for Congress and for the president is what are the policies that they're going to need to embrace to change or to be supportive of change? Because the country right now just seems to be demanding not just apology and not just justice, but sort of structural systemic changes to the way the justice system operates and clearly, demonstrably, has not treated all Americans fairly.
On the question of the president's responses, I mean, it was extraordinary actually to see reports that as the protesters got closer to the White House itself, the reports have come out that he was ushered down to the bunker. And reports also has been quite rattled by this. Of his statements so far, including the latest, which is saying you're all going to look like jerks, this is to the police, you can look like jerks if you don't dominate the protesters. It's been, even by the president's own typical belligerent approach to public discourse, it's been quite extraordinary. And is it, as I think either your governor or your mayor in Minneapolis said, is it inflaming things? Is it making things worse? She asked him just to be silent.
I don't think there's any doubt that the president has made this worse. And it's not just because of his rhetoric in this instance. Donald Trump has a very long record, even prior to his time in political life, of saying and doing things that were either fueling racism, using the language of racism, or embracing sort of racist sentiments. And so, you know, super majorities of black and brown people in this country already believed that the president had racist views prior to the unrest that you're seeing now. Our polling data shows that. What I think is shifting now, quite frankly, is not the attitudes of black and brown people, it's the attitudes of white people. More white people in this country have, and put there again, there's polling data that strongly backs this up, that the real shift in racial attitudes in this country in the past 4 to 6 years has been among white people, who now agree that the justice system is unfair, that it does racially discriminate, and they do support policies that many white people in this country did not support as recently as 10 years ago. So the ideological shift is racial. It's just maybe not where you might expect it to come from. I don't think the country thinks the president's doing a good job here. The Washington Post had a poll out yesterday. He is losing to Joe Biden by 10 percentage points right now. One of his biggest drops in support has been among Americans 60 and older, the group of Americans most hit by the coronavirus pandemic. I mean, this is a president who I think is fair to say is the underdog in his reelection campaign right now. He has not led in a single national poll against Joe Biden in this year. So his approval rating seems pretty stable, but it's still not very good. And it's certainly not a good position to be for an incumbent president. I believe we're about 155 days out from re-election for what his chances are. Now, as you well know, in this country, things can change very quickly and on a dime. But the pandemic's not going anywhere fast. The racial injustice is not going anywhere fast. And these are problems that are likely going to define the election in this country. And right now, most Americans think that Donald Trump is on the wrong side of both of those things.
It was the Atlanta mayor, Keisha Lance Bottoms, I was referring to when she said he should just stay silent. He makes it worse. What of Joe Biden then? So the latest polling shows a significant lead on the national vote, the popular vote. How is he speaking and conducting himself in this situation? And actually, I've also seen plenty of commentary saying, what you're doing isn't enough. This is more fundamental than just saying, hey, I'll take it back to what it was before. What has been the commentary around him?
Well, for the first time since the pandemic started, he's begun to leave his home. He has basically taken the lead in a presidential race without leaving his house for the better part of 3 months. He left his Wilmington, Delaware home today to go to a local black church, meet with community leaders. One of the things that is Joe Biden's strength in this moment, one of his characteristics as a politician, is his ability to empathy and empathize and strong relationships with the black community. And those are skills right now that I think are benefiting Biden as a politician, because tonally he is hitting the notes that this country tends to want to hear from its leaders: unity, empathy, justice, forward moving. And so that works for him. Frankly, I'm not sure that Biden's strength in this race is because of Joe Biden. I think more Americans are negatively motivated to vote against Donald Trump than they are to vote for Joe Biden. And he clearly has his own problems. Even, you know, today he had a verbal gaffe in which he suggested police should just shoot people in the legs instead of shooting them in the heart when they're having these interactions. Not exactly the message that many Americans want to hear right now. He's not got a clear case shot at winning this race, but just being an alternative to Donald Trump might be enough. The question Democrats have had is, will people be enthused? Will people want to show up? I don't think the question anymore is whether people want to vote. The bigger question in this country is, does the health pandemic do voting restrictions affect how many people can vote, not whether people are excited to do so.
They are extraordinary times and scenes, Susan, and very painful ones for your country. Thank you very much. Susan Davis, Congressional Correspondent for NPR and co-host of the NPR Politics Podcast.